Okay, well, we don't really have time to break into the small groups unless you want to stay an extra half hour, which you probably don't. So why don't we just debrief a little bit as a group. How many of you had seen this before? Just two, three, or four. I really find this to be a tremendous teaching tool because it's not dumbed down. You have experts. The graphic content fits the subject matter. And these are not fly-by-night people. These are really well-established, thoughtful people with publications, with earned degrees in science and so on. And they're not overstating the case either. They're simply trying to make the point that living systems give evidence of design, and this can be detected through a particular method. And unless you leave out the method, you exclude it a priori, there's evidence of design in a variety of places, especially at the cellular and informational level. Now, you notice that this film didn't say anything about the fossil record, didn't deal with a lot of the common criticisms we hear of Darwinism. Those are still there, and those are still important and effective. Stephen Jay Gould said that the inconsistencies in the fossil record, that this is a trade secret of paleontology. And he developed a whole theory called punctuated equilibria that goes against Darwinian gradualism, that species emerge actually quite quickly because the fossil record shows stasis and sudden emergence, stasis and sudden emergence, not a gradual pattern of increasing complexity. Now, at the very lowest level, you find simpler organisms. So it goes from simpler to complex, but it's not a smooth continuity at all. That's Darwinism, basically, is the continuity. Now, Gould and Eldridge, his co-writer, maintained natural selection. They maintained naturalism, certainly, but they thought it just inexplicably jumped very, very quickly at certain points. That was called originally by Goldschmidt the hopeful monster theory. But let me ask you this question. Can you see how the definition of science is so important in all this? Because these authors and these speakers are not saying, we know from the Bible there has to be design, so we went looking for it. They're saying, how do we reliably detect design? And Dembski is really the genius of this in information theory. You find something that is antecedently improbable, which fits a detachable pattern, like Mount Rushmore. So it's improbable, but it fits a pattern. It's not merely improbable. That's how we detect information. We detect information in things like written communication. We detect it in art. We detect it in various symbol systems. And you have to remember, the naturalistic worldview is a matter first, mind later worldview. So you've got matter in various configurations, and eventually you have life, eventually you have sentient life, and eventually you have more full-fledged minds. The mind only comes far later after the Big Bang. The mind was never at the beginning. Not in the beginning was the word. In the beginning were the particles. And the particles, I'm stealing from Philip Johnson, some of you know, and the particles had to do all the creating that would be done. So the information argument is saying, look, the chemical, physical structure of nature cannot allow for the specified complexity required for life. You have to have intelligence here at the beginning of the system. If you have intelligence at the beginning, you can explain these irreducibly complex forms like the bacterial flagellum and other features of life. If mind only is an emergent property, then you have to appeal to nothing but chance and natural law, plus nothing. Information must come out of non-information. Life has to come out of non-life. Mind has to come out of mindless matter, somehow. And I find, in many ways, the most arresting thing about that film, Dean Kenyon, because he had invested an entire book, an entire career, in showing how life supposedly could form without any intelligent intervention. And he was humble enough to take seriously a criticism of a student that, wait a minute, this won't work with the formulation of the amino acids. So as a good thinker, a critical thinker, he goes back and he rethinks his theory. And he keeps working on it, And he realizes there's something missing required to get life started. And that one thing is the theory that naturalism does not allow. Antecedent intelligence. But then he realizes, as someone very well versed in all this, that antecedent intelligence explains the phenomena scientifically far better than his impersonal chance explanation. Basically, chance and necessity, that combination. Natural laws operating on various materials. Now, I want you to think about the pattern of argument that is being used. It's an inference to the best explanation. It doesn't beg the question. Another very profound statement in the film was made by, or so many of them, really. But one of them was made by Behe. He said, intelligent design may have religious implications, but it doesn't have any religious presuppositions. Now, that is pivotal. Can you make a strong argument that intelligence is required for life without presupposing a biblical worldview? I think you can. You take a theistic worldview as a hypothesis. Now, what best explains, this should be familiar from our basic method of apologetics, what best explains these features of life? The DNA, the bacterial flagellum, and so on. What best explains it? Is it a purely naturalistic world, a mind later, matter first, mind later worldview? Or is it a mind-first worldview where the intelligence designs these features? Remember, Darwinism is a design substitute. So Dawkins, in his book, The Blind Watchmaker, think about that title, says that biology is the science of studying things that appear to be designed but aren't. And he spends the next 300 pages trying to convince the reader that that is the case. Questions or comments about the arguments in the film, the illustrations? Yes.
Is there any philosophical arguments against thinking being random at all? I mean, I think the analogy of computer programs having random generators, but not actually random. They just use the clock timer and go through some sort of code that produces.
There's still a program. A program for random number generation. What's random is that there's no detachable, specifiable pattern to what is produced. And you could say, I'm going to take Scrabble pieces and throw them on the table three times a minute for the next 4 days and see what happens. Well, there's a specifiable program, but you're not going to produce any specified information. You've got a method for producing a bunch of junk, but you're not going to come up with even to be or not to be. It's highly, highly unlikely. See, all the naturalists have to rely on is chance and necessity. And information is probably the thing, Lord willing, that will break the back of naturalism. Because we know far more about information in living systems now than we did even a couple of decades ago. And some people are arguing, Philip Johnson is arguing this, others, that information, Polanyi argued this back in the 1950s in an essay called Life's Irreducible Structure, Michael Polanyi, is that the information is not accountable, is not explicable on the basis of physical systems alone. Information is really quite a mysterious thing in many ways. And it could be that what is now being called the information problem will break the back of naturalism, of materialism. Let's hope it will. But they won't go out without a fight, don't worry. I mean, they'll keep using the National Geographic strategies, which is argument by evasion, until we rub their nose in it. Until the scientific establishment has to realize that they have rigged the game such that alternatives are not truly considered. And there is progress in terms of publications, conferences, materials such as this. There's an important strategy to get criticisms of Darwinism into the public schools, get material like this in the public schools. But the ACLU and people of those ilk are fighting it on the basis of church-state separation. That's their chop. That's their idea to keep this idea out of the schools. So remember, the plausibility structure and the rationality. They may be very, very different. In this case, I believe they're very different. Because the plausibility structure is methodological naturalism. The evidence, the arguments, support design. But the setup is given such that it is difficult to argue for design in the public forum. But I'm hopeful. This movement is really only about 15 years old at the most. It seems to be developing. It has been recognized. There's a major book out edited by Dembski and Michael Ruse. Ruse is an evolutionist. I believe it's called Debating Darwinism. Views on both sides. An academic press. I think it's Cambridge University Press. The books are coming out. The articles are coming out. They're very, very solid web pages. People are taking Michael Behe very seriously. There are a lot of people out there trying to refute him. And I've tried to keep up with the debates. And he keeps publishing. Anytime somebody tries to refute him, he takes the argument seriously and responds to it. And thus far, I haven't seen any satisfactory responses. They're all, to be honest, really lame. I mean, I found one recently, and I got Behe's email. I found it, and I looked at the article, and I made a few comments about it. And he said, sure, they didn't even deal with my argument. That we've destroyed this whole ridiculous irreducible complexity issue because we can find a similar structure that's not quite as efficient in another organism. Yeah, that means that one was designed too. And they were talking about Platonic forms, and as if he's relying on Platonic forms for his theory. And Behe wrote back and he said, "Yeah, it's just another miss. They didn't even tackle my theory." Now, what's happening is this kind of a slow, but I hope seismic sort of change. The evolutionary establishment—it's called the evil empire. The evil empire has not had to deal with serious scientific critique for a long time because they've successfully marginalized it. Now, you've got people with PhDs in mathematics, PhDs in philosophy, PhDs in biochemistry, publishing books, publishing articles, even referee journal articles. Remember the gold standard of the academic world. And some of the academic Darwinists are coming out of the closet saying, we've got to take this seriously. This is getting a little dangerous. This is getting serious. We can't just call it non-science anymore. We've got to take it seriously. We've got to deal with it. So argument by evasion seems to be giving way to, it's crazy, but we've probably got to deal with it. And you hope the next step is, well, they deserve at least a place at the table of discussion. And we hope eventually it will be that all of these ideas are taken seriously and not just exempted or preempted on the basis of methodological naturalism. But you see, all the evidence in the world means nothing unless you tackle that methodological naturalism presupposition. Because as Lewontin said, it doesn't matter how ridiculous it looks, it doesn't matter if it looks like a just-so story, we are committed to materialism and we cannot let a divine foot in the door. Well, what these folks are saying is not, let's stop doing science and read the Bible, right? I mean, they're talking about reliable methods for detecting design, reintroducing intelligent causes that leave evidence of their existence in the material world, reintroducing that into the methodology of science. That's it. That's what they want to do. And the evil empire is fighting like a dog to stop that from happening. If it happens, it forms what Philip Johnson calls a wedge strategy. So what you're trying to do is separate, this is my last chop, I know we're going over, you're trying to separate materialistic philosophy from empirical science. And if you can separate those by a wedge, the negative apologists like Johnson, the people doing positive work like Behe, the mathematician, Dembski, philosopher of science, Maher, and others, people doing this work, powerful critiques of Darwinism, Jonathan Wells. You can separate materialist philosophy from empirical science. It opens up the discourse fantastically to other opportunities, other possibilities. That is the scientific research program of intelligent design. The apologetic part of it is simply, you have dethroned, if this works, you have dethroned naturalism. That is not insignificant. There's a lot of other apologetic work to do.